20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Happy day two of Packers training camp. Welcome into an all new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find me on the Pack-A-Day Podcast, of course, now on TikTok over on Pack-A-Day Podcast as well. So make sure you're checking that out. I'm so excited today to jump into everything that took place on day one of Packers training camp. As I mentioned, thank you for being here and just thank you for this opportunity to get to chat Packers with you guys every single day. There are some of these, it's rare, but every once in a great while I'll be recording. It's 11:41 PM on Wednesday as I'm recording this. And sometimes it'll be 1 AM, 2 AM. It's rare, but every once in a while, there'll be one of like, all right, let's hit record. Let's get this thing over with. And then there are days like today where I am just beaming and so excited to share with you all the details, all the key takeaways from day one of training camp. So we'll jump into that in just a moment. But again, thank you for this opportunity. I love getting to do this. It is really a labor of love. A lot of hard work, time, effort, and energy goes into it. But hopefully you guys see the passion on your side of things that I have to just get to talk Green Bay Packers football 365 days a year. And like I said, some days are not always created equal. These are really, really fun ones as we kick off really, truly this 2025-2026 campaign with the start of Packers training camp. Before we get into all the news and notes, shout out to John Pledel and Christian0426 for signing up to become brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. If you haven't checked those out yet, make sure to do so. Now is a great time to get signed up. Also, reminder to get those or to just subscribe to the channel and also get those notifications turned on, get those automatic downloads turned on over on the audio channel as well. That's just going to make sure that you're getting those episodes every single day and you don't have to count on the algorithm or anything like that. And it, again, helps the channel a ton. Also, I'm going to be doing a live preseason Q&A before the very first preseason game, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 9th. Prior to that Jets preseason game in Green Bay, Hagemeister Park. Don't miss it. Make sure to get there. It's going to be a ton of fun. We did one for the draft. It was awesome. It was unbelievable. So many great questions. We did the whole 2 hours for the draft, answered every single question, did a meet and greet after. We'll do that again this time as well. So again, Saturday, August 9th, the preseason game's at 7. I'm going to do the live Q&A from 4 to 6, and then, of course, get over to the preseason game after that. There'll be plenty of time to do so, so make sure that you're checking that out again. Again, Saturday, August 9th, 4 to 6, Hagemeister Park before Packers-Jets preseason week one. As I mentioned yesterday, I'm going to be doing a live show after each and every practice. So today, as soon as I get back, probably around 1 p.m. again, I'll be doing that live Q&A. So keep an eye out for that. And let me just finally say, it is so insanely great to have football back just on the timeline, like even on social media. You know, when you go NFL Network and check out all the stuff that they're putting out there with training camp, and it just, it's incredible. And it, like, I'm seeing these rookies for other teams that are doing things for the first time, and free agents that have gone different places. And it's just, it's so great to have football back and to be talking real actual football again. So we have a lot to get into from a Packers standpoint. So let's get into it. Injury update first. And let me just really quickly say, if you did listen to the live show, some of this is going to be carryover, right? If you did listen to the immediate reaction, I went through kind of the first 15 minutes of kind of my key takeaways. We're going to be going through a lot of those things again here today. So there will be some repeat information just inherently, but there's going to be a lot more detail in today's show than what you got just in the initial gut reaction live from what we did again yesterday, immediately following practice. But here we go. Injury update. There were multiple players that were not practicing due to injury, including Quay Walker, Christian Watson, Colin Oliver, Amar Johnson, John Williams, and Elgton Jenkins. It looked like Micah Robinson was not going to practice, but he did actually return to practice. It was a knee injury. He must have passed his physical right before the start of practice, because I think it was PR that was giving out the notes of, you know, he was going to be out with a knee, but he actually was out there practicing. My guess is it was only individual. I don't think I saw him doing any team activities, but it was great to see him out there nonetheless. So he returned. I guess I can't say returned since technically there wasn't a, you know, day of practice before, but he did miss the end of mini camp. So I guess I can technically say he returned from injury, but no longer on the injury list. And hopefully he's going to be clear moving forward. It's also worth noting that Quay Walker was activated from the physically unable to perform list by the end of the day. Goody did mention in his press conference that it was going to be probably a week to get Quay Walker ramped back up. More on that in just a moment, but he was activated from the physically unable to perform list, and hopefully that means he's going to be ready to go. My guess is, again, there is some sort of ramp up period where over the next week or so, maybe just doing some, you know, work to the side, maybe doing some individual drills only, probably not doing team drills, but a great sign that he was activated nonetheless. Should also note that Savion Williams was not in the red no contact jersey, so that's a great sign for him. Said he had a small brace on his shoulder still, but he said he was good to go, and it's, again, a great sign that that red contact or non-contact jersey was not needed for Savion Williams. As far as individual injuries go, Quay Walker was dealing with an ankle injury. He had some off-season cleanup procedure on that ankle, and that's what he is recovering from. Christian Watson, of course, the knee injury, we know that one. Colin Oliver is dealing with a hamstring injury. Amar Johnson's dealing with a hamstring injury. John Williams is dealing with a back injury. And then allegedly, Elgton Jenkins is dealing with a back injury as well. Before practice started, we had press conferences from both Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur. I thought a lot more key takeaways from the Goody press conference than the LaFleur one. From a Goody standpoint, I asked him about the Jair Alexander cap hit and why they took it this year instead of next year. He didn't really have any great detail on it other than saying it was a horse apiece one way or the other. They decided basically just to take their medicine now on it since they had the money. They wanted to have the money next year to spend, which isn't really a great answer because you carry over any unused cap anyway. So again, as he mentioned, it is a horse apiece. I have a feeling, and I don't know what it would possibly be or why they would do this, but I have a feeling that Russ Ball had something, even if it was something minuscule and minute, to actually go out of your way to take on that dead cap hit this year, which really makes no sense because you can carry it over to next year anyway. My guess is Russ Ball had something cooking, even if it was minuscule and minute and not observable to the casual salary cap guru's eyes. But there was no update from Brian Gutekunst, unfortunately. I was really hoping to sort of solve that riddle and figure out why they did it. But alas, it doesn't matter at all, by the way. The Packers will have as much flexibility as they want. So it really does not matter. There's no real downside here, but it was interesting nonetheless. But unfortunately, no further to a resolution as to exactly why Green Bay went through the extra steps of doing that. He did mention that the two, you know, more serious injuries for Green Bay, of course, were Christian Watson, which we knew, and then John Williams with his back injury. It sounds like that John Williams injury is still going to be a while, which is a really difficult situation for him. Talked about this on the live show, but you know, you get into the Grant Dubose, the Lou Nichols territory where these guys just are out for almost the entirety of the offseason and they never have an opportunity to make the team. So hopefully Williams can get back following the footsteps of a Rashid Walker who missed a huge chunk of camp and then was back for the last week, went out in that final preseason game and dominated and earned himself a roster spot, and the rest was history. Hopefully John Williams can follow that same path, but these are just brutal blows to young, inexperienced college players making their way to the NFL. You want to get them to that strong start. You want to give this late seventh round pick every opportunity to make the team. And unfortunately his body just not cooperating in this instance and making it really difficult on John Williams. Colin Oliver is about a few weeks away per Brian Gutekunst. Quay is not a contract issue. I actually take him for his word on that one. And again, even probably more of a sign that he was activated off the physically unable to perform list and is probably going to be doing some ramping up and practicing as soon as, you know, Thursday. So yeah, I think he's probably telling the truth on that one. It's just my gut feel on it, sincerely. So it does not seem to be a contract issue there. Quay, as he mentioned, was about a week away. Again, activated from the PUP list at the end of the day. And again, there's probably going to be some small ramp-up period there. He did state, he was asked about Elgton Jenkins, and I forget who it was, but asked very specifically, did Elgton Jenkins give you any indication that once his back is better, he's willing to go out and practice? And Goody said yes. First and foremost, general managers, part of their job description is to lie. So this easily could just be a lie. Could be telling the truth. That's a possibility as well. I would love to believe that he's just telling the truth and that as soon as this interesting back injury gets cleared up, that Elton will be out there. My guess is the back injury is a contract issue. And as soon as that back injury, which is really a contract issue, gets cleared up, he will be out there practicing. So, you know, back injury just feels like it's, you know, code at this point. I don't know. You know, you can be as cynical as you want or believing as you want. And that's just sort of your own choose your adventure, right? Hopefully, fingers crossed, Elton's back out there sooner rather than later. We'll see if some sort of contract thing gets resolved. And then all of a sudden, look at his back's all better. Or if maybe there is a legitimate back issue. Or if he gets taken off the non-football injury list, but is still not practicing. And then we know that this is that there was maybe some injury issue, but there's also that contract issue going on as well. Only time will tell at this point, but it'd be great to see Elton back out there sooner rather than later. The other thing that Goody mentioned to us before we even got out at practice is that Bo Melton is moving to cornerback. And this is a difference. You might say he was playing corner in minicamp. Why is this news? He did not move to corner in minicamp. He was a wide receiver that was moonlighting as a corner, that was, you know, dabbling at corner, that was, you know, just sort of trying it out. He is now a corner that has wide receiver ability. That is now switched. And it does not sound like they have any real desire in training camp to play him at wide receiver at all. In fact, I don't think we're going to see him play at wide receiver at all. You go to Packers.com. He is listed as a corner. He was wearing defensive jersey. He was out on defense only. And it does seem now like Bo Melton is truly a corner and no longer a wide receiver, which is, again, it's different from a Travis Hunter. He's going to play both ways sort of thing. And now more of a real true position change. And as far as whether or not that's a good thing or whether or not he has a real chance, I think the answer to both is yes. I think that wide receiver room is crowded. I think he probably had a 1 in 3 chance between him, Malik Heath, and Mecole Hardman to get that number 6 wide receiver spot. I think that is a tough competition in and of itself. And I think you're fighting that even once Christian Watson comes back, that spot could easily get eliminated as well. And you might just end up released in that situation. I think the core of Bo Melton is truly still a special teams player where he can play on all different special teams units. But now, you know, the odds of anybody, but especially like a Bo Melton, making it as a number 4 corner, I think are higher than a number 4 wide receiver, right? And I get, you know, a wide receiver, you just need to make it in the top 6. The truth is that corner too, you probably only need to make it in the top 6. And there's so much more up for grabs at corner. You know, Micah Robinson, Kalen King, Kamal Haddon have no real grasp on those 4, 5, or 6 corner spots at this point. So Bo Melton has every right to go and grab one of those spots. Whereas again, he's fighting tooth and nail just to try to get the number 6 wide receiver spot on the other side. So I think it's good for Melton. I think it makes sense for the Packers. I still think if he does make it as a corner, you could use him as a wide receiver still on game days and he would have that value, but it sounds like they're really truly giving him that opportunity to play corner. And by the way, he's not down with like the backup group playing corner. He's with the core group playing corner. Take that for what it's worth, but they're giving him real legitimate opportunities. I do not think that this is just some desperation Hail Mary to try to salvage Bo Melton here. There's a piece of that for sure. They're trying to, I think, help him out and try to find a way for him to make this team. But I really truly believe he's got a shot here. The percentage-wise, I don't know. I really don't. But again, the depth being minimal at corner already, and he kind of already seemingly looks the part at corner. I'm intrigued. I'm really, really intrigued. I know that the people in chat were throwing around Sam Shields. Let's just take this a day at a time. Let's see how long this lasts for. Let's see if he can make a 53-man roster first before we start jumping to Sam Shields territory. It's an interesting move. I'm excited about it, and I'm really intrigued to see what Bo Melton can do at corner. By the way, wearing number 16 moving forward. And then last but not least, from a Gutekunst standpoint, he was asked if Christian Watson will participate at any point in training camp, if there's any expectation or hope of that, and Goody shot it down clear as day and said no, that Christian Watson will not participate in training camp in any way, shape, or form. So that will be a, you know, down the road thing. I still think we're looking probably somewhere between like weeks 8 and 12. But we'll take it. And if it's earlier than that, great, assuming he's good to go. But to me, probably again in that 8 to 12 week territory. But still, signs are great. Everyone says he's ahead of schedule, that he's an absolute freak, that things are going well. So fingers crossed that continues to go that way for Christian Watson moving forward. As far as Matt goes, I didn't think there were a ton of key takeaways from his press conference. I did ask him, you know, he brought up that the division is tough and that the schedule is tough and things like that. I asked him about, you know, you've got a tough game with Detroit week one. Is there any sort of change in philosophy for preseason? Do you want to play guys more or anything like that? It's a pretty simple no, that they trust their process and they trust their procedures to get the team ready. They're 1-3 in their last week one games. I did not bring that up in the question, but they're 1-3 in their last week one games to start the year. He did have success prior to that, but hasn't been easy as of late. So hopefully they can turn that around, get a big win against Detroit week one this year. But per Matt LaFleur, no real changes to their preseason procedures or getting guys more playing time to get them amped up and ready for that week one game against Detroit. And then, of course, an immediate follow-up, 4 days later against Washington, also at Lambeau Field. We'll be right back. All right, let's get to practice. Your starters on offense, once we eventually got to the team activities, were Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft. The offensive line was Rashid Walker, Aaron Banks, Sean Ryan at center, noteworthy there, Jordan Morgan at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle. I'm going to tell you the wide receivers. These wide receivers of all the stuff that we talk about, really, they rotate these guys so much. So for example, with like the very first time we saw team activity in the walkthrough, Malik Heath was with the ones. And then they cycled through those guys just on basically every single play. So never take, this goes for mini camp, OTA, training camp, et cetera. Never really take the wide receivers of like who's with the ones for any real major, noteworthiness. But I'll tell you that in this case, it was Dobbs, Reed, and Wicks, which of course are primarily the top three, but those were the three in this instance. On the defensive side of the ball, it was LVN and Gary at defensive ends, Wyatt and Clark at defensive tackles, Cooper and McDuffie at linebacker, Nixon and Hobbs on the outside, Bullard in the slot, McKinney and Williams at safety. As I sort of predicted and prognosticated, my expectation going in was that we were going to see two nickel defenses, basically like a base nickel and then like a true nickel with three corners. And we saw exactly that. We saw the base nickel, early downs, you know, first and tens, those sort of things, which did consist of Hobbs and Nixon on the outside with Javon Bullard in the slot and then McKinney and Williams at safety. I expect that to be the case. I think that's going to be the case moving forward when the season starts. I think they want Bullard more on early downs, a little bit more of a physical presence to try to stop the run a little bit more. I think it makes sense. The downfall of Javon Bullard this past year is greatly exaggerated. He's a very good football player, but I do think there is logic in not putting him in more of those obvious passing situations where he did struggle a little bit more, and to bring in Nate Hobbs in the slot in that situation and then Carrington Valentine on the outside, which again is exactly what they did. So base nickel, if you will, big nickel, if you want to call it, Javon Bullard in the slot, Nixon and Hobbs on the outside, true nickel or obvious passing down nickel, whatever you want to call that, Hobbs in the slot, again, with Nixon and Valentine on the outside. Williams and McKinney still at safety, although it does sound, Paul Bredel mentioned this, that Bullard did get some time next to McKinney in that grouping as well. So it sounds like Evan Williams at least has a little bit of competition from Javon Bullard for that spot as well. The offensive line, as we mentioned, was Walker, Banks, Ryan, Morgan, and Tom. Ryan is the interesting one here, getting the time at center. OTAs and mini camps, that was primarily Jacob Monk working with the ones. Day one of camp, it was Sean Ryan. And then again, getting Jordan Morgan those reps at right guard. Jacob Monk did get time with the center position with the ones as well. And Travis Glover got time with the ones at left guard. So we did see a line for a little bit of Jordan Morgan at left tackle, Travis Glover at left guard, Monk at center, Sean Ryan at right guard, and then Zach Tom at right tackle. Your number two offensive line from left to right was Anthony Belton at left tackle, Donovan Jennings at left guard, Jacob Monk at center, Travis Glover at right guard, and Kadeem Telford at right tackle. Your third team offensive line was left to right, Brant Banks, JJ Lippy, Trey Hill, Tyler Cooper, and then it was a mix and match of Kadeem Telfort and Anthony Belton over at that right tackle spot with the threes. Noteworthy as well that Kamal Haddon and, as mentioned, Bo Melton got time with the top groups at corner. Does feel like Kamal Haddon is a little bit ahead of Kalen King at this point in time, which really is a carryover from this last season as well, where Haddon got called up earlier to the roster than what Kalen King did. And then your second team defensive line was Kingsley Enagbare and Brenton Cox at defensive ends with Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks at defensive tackle. I have a lot of different player updates and different plays, matchups, notes, etc. Want to jump into all of it. It was awesome to see Marshawn Lloyd back out there. He just has a way of making things happen. And it was something that showed up in training camp a year ago before he got hurt. And he just has the ability to make a cut or bounce to the outside that's just different. He's a playmaker. You get the ball in his hands and he has the ability to make things happen. He had a run where, you know, it was, I couldn't tell from, again, the sideline angle. Looked like it was just a, you know, up the gut run and there's nothing there. And all of a sudden he cuts outside and makes it into what I would say is like a 20-yard run on the play. And again, it's just the vision. It's the burst. It's the timing. He just has it. And getting that playmaking back in the backfield and being able to spell Josh Jacobs and still have that playmaking out on the field has the potential to be really important and really potent for that number two running back spot, which, by the way, we did see a good chunk of Marshawn Lloyd as the number two running back. The other thing I want to mention here with Lloyd, and it's tough to say this because we're not tackling. Not only are we not tackling, we're not in a situation where there's even pads on. You're not even really thudding guys, but it was noteworthy of how much he was running behind his pads, even when guys were just kind of knocked the ball out and things like that. For a shorter guy, he's very built and he has got a low center of gravity and you just see things bounce off of him. And I love the way that he runs. I love the low center of gravity and then that playmaking ability as well. But as mentioned, it was just great to see him out there after a ridiculously, you know, wild turn of events and injuries and ailments in 2024. Xavier McKinney, likely with the play of the day, just doing Xavier McKinney things. Red zone period. Jordan Love tried to get one up and over to Dontavian Wicks in the back right corner of the end zone. Xavier McKinney read it, undercut it, made a great interception on the play, got his feet down, and the defense, of course, mobbed him and went wild. That was the only turnover for the day. Willis didn't throw a pick. I don't believe Clifford threw a pick. I guess, again, I didn't watch every rep with the twos on the other side, so it's possible maybe there was a pick or a turnover over there, but I do believe that was the only turnover of the day, and who else would come up with it than Xavier McKinney? Just, again, a master of his craft and such a joy to watch perform, whether in games or even in training camp practices. So great to have Brandon McManus back, 6 for 6 on field goals. 33, 38, 41, 43, 38, and 46 were the distances. Nothing crazy, although, again, a 46-yarder is nothing to sneeze at overall, and just happy to see a kicker go 6 for 6. Last year's kicking competition was brutal, to say the least, so very happy that he is back kicking for Green Bay and providing that level of consistency at that spot. I should mention, by the way, no sign of the new kicker. I don't know if he's just getting in from Ireland, if there's like visa issues or whatever the case may be. Not exactly sure, but I did not see him. I didn't see anyone else mark him as absent. So maybe he was somewhere, but I know when like Whalen and McManus and Orzik came out to do the snapping and everything and just kind of practice ahead of time, he was not out there with them and he didn't do any kicking on the day. So my guess is he wasn't there yet. Again, I didn't see anyone else really mark him quote unquote absent, but I did not see him out there. I thought Malik Willis had a pretty nice day. He in red zone had a couple touchdown throws, including to Matthew Golden, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And trying to think who the other touchdown was to. Either way, had a really nice day, had two touchdown passes in the red zone. And again, just, it's nice to see Malik Willis get that full offseason in Matt LaFleur's offense. He had to do so much of a crash course this past year. And to get a full offseason in LaFleur's offense, I think is going to serve him very, very well. And he just looks so much more comfortable, you know, just kind of going through everything now that he's had that full year to kind of digest everything a little bit more. But yeah, I thought he had a really nice day. And again, a couple of really nice throws in red zone activities. Jordan Love on the day, of course, everyone's going to be keeping an extra eye on Jordan Love. He had the interception to McKinney. Again, on sideline angle, and I was actually tracking something and then just caught the end of the interception for McKinney. I couldn't tell if this was a poor decision, if this was just a poor throw, if it was just an unbelievable play by McKinney, if Wicks did something wrong. I don't know. So I'm my apologies for that I don't have a great description of exactly what happened. But clearly interceptions are bad, although I would argue, as I mentioned in the live chat yesterday, I don't hate my quarterback, on my team, regardless if it's high school, college, pros, whatever. I don't hate my quarterback throwing some interceptions in practice. That's what this stuff is for, to test your limits, to try things out, to see what you can do, what you can't do. And in this case, he threw a pick. He'll learn from that. And that's where you want to learn those lessons, is in practice. So reminder that you're not competing for wins and losses and championships at practice. Your job at practice is to become a better player and to become a better team. And to be able to do that, you have to try, you have to fail, you have to learn the limits. And I don't think, those are the worst things in the world. So one interception for Jordan Love. He did have three touchdowns in the red zone period. I thought overall looked accurate. Did have one missed throw that was just slightly out of the outstretched arms of, I want to say it was either Ben Sims, Fitzpatrick, maybe Kraft. It was one of the tight ends. It wouldn't have gone for much anyway. I think he was rolling a little bit and it just got slightly away from him and was, outside of his, the tight end's outstretched arms. But again, we'll talk about his stats in just a moment. Not a, wow day from Jordan Love, not a stellar, spectacular day, but certainly not a bad day. And again, it's just, tough where there weren't many team periods. They did a lot of red zone, that area condenses quite a bit. I also don't know for Xavier McKinney's pick, they were doing usually like a down and distance. So I don't know if it was like a fourth down and he had to throw a ball up. I don't know what the down and distance was there on the pick to McKinney either. So, solid day, not spectacular day from Jordan Love, but nothing to be concerned about in any way, shape, or form. Matthew Golden had the touchdown reception from Malik Willis, which was awesome to see. He beat Carrington Valentine on the play. Great job from Valentine of not giving up on it. He eventually knocked it loose, but Golden had possession in the end zone. Ref called it a touchdown. I just like that Valentine didn't give up on it. That was a sweet route, catch, everything like that. Golden did have a couple rookie moments here and there. Just again, alignment, the motions, like all of that sort of stuff. Very common for rookies to, have to get that down and master that a little bit more. But you could see there was a little bit of, that rookie, deer in headlights sort of look from Matthew Golden at times. For him, this is not a talent issue. Like, he is very clearly super talented. Speed, route running, he's got some run after the catch ability, of course. Like, he's got it, right? It's just going to be how quickly can he get that attention to detail down, understand the full complexities of the offense, and go out there and not have to think as much. Because right now you can tell he's doing a little bit of thinking out there. Tucker Kraft definitely was a player who was ultra involved throughout the course of practice and was the one who got the first two receptions on the day as well. So maybe 2025 is going to be the year of Tucker Kraft and they are going to feature him a little bit more in this offense. Really liking what I'm seeing out of Nate Hobbs so far. And this is not just a day one of training camp hot take. I liked what I saw in training camp, in mini camp and OTAs, day one of training camp. The vibe I get from a Nate Hobbs is a little bit of when Rasul Douglas was playing very well in Green Bay. That's kind of the overall aura, I will say, as just in general, I would say that's kind of the vibe that I get from Nate Hobbs. Not an apples to apples comparison as a player, but just veteran, super confident. Nothing's going to rattle him. He had a great play on Josh Jacobs. So play action fake. Jacobs is going down the field. Jacobs has a step on a player. Hobbs came off his man and helped break up the play. We'll talk about that one in just a little bit as well. But I just really, really like what I've seen from Nate Hobbs so far. I think you're going to really enjoy watching him play. Chris Brooks, man, do not sleep on this guy. Every team has this running back that can do everything. Run block, pass block, knows all the checks and the protections, can run the football, can catch the ball to the backfield. Ran a sweet little Texas route in the red zone. Jordan Love found him for the touchdown. Really, really nice play from him. And it just, every time you ask him to do something, he comes through and he does it. And not just like at a, oh, this is kind of boring to watch level, which Green Bay's had some of those that have played that kind of role in the past. Like, he's a good player. I like him with the ball in his hands. He's not the most dynamic player in the world, but he's good. He's not slow. He's got some physicality to him. I really like him. And if you were to, you know, make me put my money where my mouth was today, I really think Chris Brooks makes this team. Like, I would be pretty surprised already if Chris Brooks is not ever, like, you just need a guy like that in your backfield. He's so versatile, can give you everything that you want. And I'm very, very high. And I liked what I saw out of Chris Brooks today as well. It's a tough battle, right? Lloyd and Jacobs are going to make the team. And we all like Emmanuel Wilson as well. So if you only keep three, again, it's a very interesting decision there between Wilson and Brooks. But I just think they find a way to keep him one way or the other. We'll be right back. Also noteworthy that John Fitzpatrick got a lot of runs. That would be a crazy take. If they just started handing off to John Fitzpatrick all throughout the course of the day. But no, he got a lot of run with the ones, which is what I was trying to say. And he definitely seems to be, I don't want to say necessarily the like major leader in the clubhouse, because Ben Sims got time with the ones as well, but they were not afraid to put him out there. And he's going to get a real opportunity to work as the number three tight end. So we'll see if he can make the most of it. I think he had at least a catch on the day, if I remember correctly. There was a lot of stuff that went in the short and intermediate to the tight ends. And I think Fitzpatrick was a benefactor of that as well. But they definitely seem to, again, like what they get, you know, get from him. They did give him a real legitimate signing bonus as well. So he definitely seems to have a leg up on Ben Sims at the moment. Your quarterback passing numbers for the day. Malik Willis in red zone was 3 for 3 with two touchdowns, zero interceptions, did take a sack. Jordan Love was 3 for 5 in red zone with 3 touchdowns. And the interception took place in a different period. So at the end, he was 3 of 5 with 3 touchdowns. And then Sean Clifford was 1 for 2 with a touchdown in that last red zone period as well. Elgersma did not get a final red zone period. Jordan Love on the day was 8 for 12, 3 touchdowns and 1 interception. Again, primarily working in the red zone. So 75% completion percentage, did have those 3 touchdowns, but did have that 1 interception as well. Couple fun matchups throughout the course of the day. Romeo Doubs versus Keyshawn Nixon. On one play, Jordan tried to get Romeo on a fade down the right sideline. It was a little bit overthrown anyway. It wasn't going to get there to Romeo, but Keyshawn Nixon had picture perfect coverage on the play. And then a little bit later in red zone, Romeo Doubs ran a little bit of like a skinny slant right at the red zone. Love threw it to him low on purpose so that he could get down, get the ball, and not have to worry about taking any hits. Obviously, they wouldn't take the hit in practice, but if it were a game situation, you know, you have to kind of be cognizant and careful of that. Placed it perfectly. Doubs came down with it and got the better. So give one to Nixon on the coverage down the sideline, but give one to Doubs on the slant for the touchdown. We also saw a couple fun matchups between Josh Jacobs and Isaiah Simmons. Screen pass in the flat to Jacobs. Isaiah Simmons was there instantaneously to make an immediate stop. And then in the red zone, Jordan Love did a great job of buying time, threw a ball over the middle, threw it a little bit high to Jacobs. Jacobs goes up and skies to get it. And you could just tell after Isaiah Simmons was shaking his head, he's like, you could tell he had good coverage on the play. Love buys time, throws it high. Jacob skies to get it and left Isaiah Simmons a little bit befuddled on the play. I thought Simmons had a really nice day. He was all over the place, a couple big run stops. You saw the speed, and Josh Jacobs had some really nice things to say about Isaiah Simmons, including calling him a unicorn out there. Could this be the year that Simmons actually puts it together and all those unbelievable traits come to fruition? I'm not sure that I'm there yet, but he's had a really nice mini camp and in day one of training camp to put himself in the conversation for maybe some playing time on defense, but really like what I've seen so far. But again, I have to go back to the tape from his career thus far. It's not been great when he's been out there on defense, but man, if Jeff Hafley and this defensive coaching staff can find a way to unlock Isaiah Simmons, he was a top 10 pick for a reason. Ultra talented dude. Now, if he puts it together at this stage of his career, what a massive win that would be for Green Bay. Some other miscellaneous notes. Thought there was a lot more movement within the offense, meaning some bootlegs, some play action, it felt a lot more cohesive than what we saw towards the end of last year, even through the middle of last year, which I believe was in large part due to Jordan's injury. Saw a lot of screens on the day. Loved that there was some play action with the spinner series. So if you remember the spinner series, it was a lot of the stuff that Malik Willis did against the Colts and Titans a year ago. But they kept it because Josh Jacobs ran it really well. But we saw that play action play. Josh Jacobs gets open down the field. Love puts it right on him beautifully, perfectly in stride. Hobbs ranges over, makes a play on it. Everyone else seems to say pass breakup from Nate Hobbs. It was a great play from Nate Hobbs. And if it were real contact, he definitely would have really made his presence known, I think, on that play. But of course, he's taking care of his teammate and it's non-contact. I still think that Jacobs should have came down with that. I would put that a little bit more in the drop. So phenomenal play from Hobbs one way or the other. But I think that's a play that Josh Jacobs would probably tell you he needs to come down with. But it was a really nice play from Nate Hobbs as well. A lot of defensive ends lining up in a little bit more of a two-point stance. So we saw Rashawn Gary and Brenton Cox, amongst others, doing some standing up. And this is something that Jeff Hafley talked about, and I think one of his first couple press conferences, of like, hey, he's not going to be afraid, where if he wants to run a 4-3 with hands in the dirt, if he's got a player that's just better at standing up, he'll stand him up. So we saw a little bit more versatility and, just dynamic, a change in players either going in the two-point stance or the three-point stance. I don't know if DeMarcus Covington had any say in that whatsoever, but it was a little bit noteworthy that we saw a few more guys in two-point stance in this particular practice. Punt returners were Jaden Reed, Keyshawn Nixon, Mecole Hardman, Romeo Doubs, Matthew Golden, and Dontavian Wicks. Did see a little bit of Ketan Oladapo in the slot with the twos. That's a very big nickel, but he's a very interesting player. I love Oladapo. I think they've got a really fun find there. Just very difficult to get him on the field at the moment. Colby Wooden and Baron Sorrell did combine for a sack of Malik Willis. Again, don't take defensive line or offensive line play for anything at the moment until pads come on early next week. Savion Williams apparently had a sick one-handed catch. I did not see it personally. Sounds like it was down more in like kind of like the individual drills. It was not during a team period, but you still love to hear that he made a spectacular one-handed grab at some point during the course of practice. And the very final play of practice was Sean Clifford to Lumpkin for a tight end. What more could you possibly want to end day one of Packers practice? One other note I should mention, Nathaniel Hackett is back. Nathaniel Backett. He is back. He is serving in a very similar role to what Robert Saleh did last year. If you remember, they brought Robert Saleh in. He's a defensive coach, but he worked with the offense to basically game plan and look at potential weaknesses and how he would attack Matt LaFleur's offense so that Matt basically gets the ideas from a true legitimate defensive coordinator of how they would attack his team so he can kind of go about trying to mitigate some of those issues before they happen in an actual game. Hackett's going to be the same thing for Jeff Hafley, where Hackett's going to be breaking things down and trying to find holes in Jeff Hafley's defense so he can propose them to Hafley ahead of time and Hafley can figure out ways to, again, course correct before they actually deal with those issues in a game themselves. So Hackett is back. Jersey unveiling 8:30 today, 8:30 Thursday morning. As you're listening to this, it's probably already done. There was a leak out there. If the leak is legit, I think the jersey looks sick as hell. It looks absolutely awesome. I know everyone disagrees, or not everyone, but some people disagree. That's fine. But if the rest of the uniform is amazing, I think the jersey is the coolest jersey that I've seen from a throwback standpoint or alternate standpoint. So I'm very excited about it and am probably going to spend way too much money at the Packers Pro Shop when everything comes out. Huge shout out to Paul Bredel, Bill Huber, and Pete Doherty. Their practice recaps helped me just kind of either jog my memory or add a couple extra layers of context that they were able to catch up on. It is an impossible task for any one person to catch anything when there's, 80 plus guys out there all practicing at the same time over the course of a couple hours and you're trying to gather as much as you can. So always double checking some of the work that's out there in case I miss something. So shout out to Paul Bredel, Bill Huber, and Pete Doherty. Go check out their articles on day one of Packers training camp. Paul Bredel over at ESPN Lacrosse, Bill Huber, Packers on SI, and Pete Doherty, of course, over on PackersNews.com. I know you're ready for day two. I am ready for day two. We'll break it all down for you immediately following the practice, as well as on our deep dive the following day. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members. Sign up for those memberships. Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Pat Scott, SoCal Pat, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, and Griffin Blee. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, actually, I'll see you later today, but until next time, and as always, go Pack out.